Hello and welcome to another Comics Burst from the Full Force podcast, sponsored by Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, where we take an in-depth look at the newest G.I. Joe comics and related titles of the week, with me as your host, Chris Burst All Over Myself McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80, and joining me on this episode are Paddy, one more potato joke away from killing me, Lennon, and Brian, 15 more potato jokes away from killing me because he is definitely more easygoing in that respect, Hickey. On this installment of your absolutely favourite kind of burst, we have a new G.I. Joe comic, About Time, and about 50 Transformers ones. So without further ado, let's get stuck into this comics burst. Transformers Bumblebee movie prequel number 1. Some call him Goldfender, but the name's B. Bumblebee. On loan to MI6 and teamed with a human partner, B's trapped in the middle of a Cold War plot to disrupt British secret intelligence, but when things go wrong, it's up to B to discover if there's a traitor in their midst. In the spy world, allegiances can change just as easily as a Transformer. Paddy. So, I was quite pleasantly surprised by this. I don't know about you.
Me too.
Yeah, like a fun kind of Mickey take of James Bond in a way, right?
Yeah, though Mickey taking means something completely different here in Ireland.
I've taken your Mickey and you can't have it back.
Now I can no longer father children.
Oh, that's amazing.
I kind of figured it would be a good book for a couple of reasons. First of all, Andrew Griffin on the art.
Yes. Beautiful art.
Really, really good work. And he's really, really upped his game for this as well. It's the first movie versus comic I think they've done where I can actually say it actually looks like a good comic.
Yeah.
Because I don't think those designs never really translated to paper very well, I don't think.
Yeah.
The movie versus designs, but in this they actually look pretty good.
I love his cover as well. His cover's gorgeous, isn't it, with the kind of the kind of James Bond-esque kind of guy in the middle and everything happening around him. I really love that. It looks gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. And he threw in, I don't know if you follow him on Twitter, it's at Glove Studios is his Twitter handle. He's been putting up the black and white pages, the inked pages,
yeah,
and then giving little like commentaries on where he got the ideas for certain designs and stuff from.
Nice.
So have a look at his, if you can find his Twitter, have a look at his Twitter feed and have a look at that. He threw in a lot of kind of Bond references in things like street names and signs on walls and stuff. You'll see a lot of little kind of coded James Bond things. Like one of the walls has 4 YEO.
Yeah, I was literally just looking at that as you said it.
Yeah, so for your eyes only.
Amazing.
Presumably that's what that stands
amazing.
For.
Amazing.
And, there's another street sign that says Walter P. Straza 38.
For the actual gun. Brilliant.
Yeah. I think he mentioned on Twitter as well the design for the bad guy's helmets in the first couple of pages.
Yeah.
It's just a Lego man's head.
You know, the head off Lego Man. It's bloody brilliant. Oh, that is amazing. And again, I'll flash the images up as this is going on, but that is fantastic. I definitely saw like a 007 somewhere as well. It might have just been on the door. Mm-hmm. I think it says 07. Yeah. But anyway, what I really liked about it was the poking fun, let's say, not the Mickey taking, of the James Bond universe. Mm-hmm. The fact that everything is an acronym for something. So you've got like PROGRAM, which mm-hmm. is preemptive resistance operating globally reacting against malevolent military efforts. And you've got, was it Eidolon, which is Espionage Intelligence Directorate Offensive Law and Order Neutralization and stuff like that. And they literally, there's probably like 2 a page as you go through it. It's fantastically, it's just so spot on. Now, David Reeve is Agent Omega Zero. So he's the kind of James Bond guy in this. And Bumblebee's his car, effectively. And when they find that this, and what I love about it, when he breaks into the bad guy's lair at the beginning and he goes into the big office where you've got the Gotell, when he breaks into Gotell's kind of, you know, his like this beautiful office, big open space, massive like bad guy windows with the moon in the distance. So obviously you've got Moonraker homaged a little bit there. But in front of his desk, in front of his desk is like this little water feature with a bridge and sharks in the water, and it is just so James Bond. And
it's the design from You Only Live Twice.
Yes.
Blofeld's office in You Only Live Twice is the same design, yeah.
And again, like, you know, they flick the chair around and the actual main guy's dead, and it's, you know, the scar across the face, the electronic eye and another eye, and the knife through his heart. So, I love all the references. But the biggest reference, which is beautifully like placed as well, is the James Bond theme song, which kind of I just love that. I got to that part of the page and I'm like, I know exactly what I'm reading here. I know, yeah, immediately.
I'm not going to do it on the podcast because it would constitute a war crime. But
you're going to sing it.
I'm very tempted to sing it like Shirley Bassey. You know?
Oh, totally. And obviously the actual issue is called The Man with the Golden Car, which is just delightful. And I really dug it. I think it's a really, really nice paced comic as well. Again, the art has a lot to do with that, but the writing's good. And it's, do you know what it reminds me of? Because I was a big fan of that Action Man miniseries at the start of the whole Revolution era. And I just loved the way that it captured that kind of, it was like sense of humor, but with that kind of James Bond feel to it. And that's what this is doing. And I just absolutely love it. And then obviously we're getting some really cool cameos from a number of different Transformers.
We have Wild Rider, Runabout, and then a new character, I believe, Diabla.
Yes, and this is the female-ish character, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Female Decepticon, yeah.
And she infiltrated the Autobots, and thus there's this kind of, you know, early in the years. And so Bumblebee thought she was good, and he thinks she's been seduced by the dark side, as it were. But she's trying to tell him, dude, I've been a bad female from the start. So I quite like that whole, I don't know, that kind of little thing between those two as well. Again, very fast-paced, not much to really grasp from it other than someone is infiltrated the British Secret Intelligence, and that's why they're being targeted as such. And Bumblebee, obviously, now he's known by the Decepticons that he's there, and he's getting attacked. So, you know, a straightforward kind of thing. And then it ends with the insinuation that Diana, not Davis, Diana is another agent of MI6, and it's insinuated that she may be the mole, but I don't think that'd be the case. It's too easy. We shall see.
It'd be a very short series if that was the case.
Issue one, and the only issue. So anyway, yeah, I really like the fact, I mean, it doesn't feel like the prequel to the movie. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't feel
no, like... No, and actually, the one good thing about the IDW comics, and particularly the ones that John Barber wrote for the movie tie-ins, is they generally tend to be much better written than the actual movies themselves.
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, Barber, they didn't do... They only did comics for the first three films. They didn't do any around the time of Age of Extinction, as far as I can remember. But Barber, when he was writing the tie-in comics, he did a lot of things to try... cover up the fact that Bay and his writers didn't read their own scripts apparently when they were filming. So he did a lot of work in the a lot of heavy lifting in the comics to try tie up plot holes and so on across those first three movies in particular. And then of course for the fifth Transformers movie, they basically threw everything out apparently and said, well, actually all that stuff you knew in the first four movies didn't happen, and they essentially rebooted the whole timeline to imply that the Transformers had been on Earth all along instead of had just arrived at the start of the 2007 movie.
Yeah.
The implication being that, you know, Bumblebee had been helping out humanity throughout history.
Yeah.
So they retconned that for the most recent movie, which I still haven't seen. And
Don't bother.
No, I've heard that too.
Do not. You will honestly, you will just feel like I've wasted my life watching this.
So the fact that they've, you know, they're doing this and it doesn't match up with what Barber has done in his previous comics, I think you can basically assume that this Bumblebee movie is a soft reboot.
A softy.
And you should just forget that everything that happened before in the prior movies, which...
I would do that anyway.
I'm fine with it.
I think it's better for everyone's mental health if we just forget that all happened.
Really, what Hasbro should do is invest money in inventing that flashy memory thingy for Men in Black for real.
The Neuralizer.
Tell us all to forget the last 12 years of Michael Bay Transformers movies, and then we all move on.
That is amazing. That is the best thing ever said on this podcast. Paddy, what would you give Transformers Bumblebee the movie prequel issue one out of five potatoes, what potating would you give it?
It is an extremely solid four potatoes.
I'm definitely agreeing with you on that one. I'm at 100% going crash bang wallet, what a video. It's an absolute beauty. Moving on. Transformers Lost Light 19 and 20 combined, because it just seems like you should do that. Death from Above. Years ago, the crew of the Lost Light fought a demonic Cybertronian mutant that fed on its victims' souls. Years later, Rodimus and co. are about to discover that the only thing worse than a Spark Eater is an army of Spark Eaters. And also for issue 20, Rodimus versus Getaway. Finally. Now, I mean, take me through your thoughts on I suppose we can talk about both of them, because in actual fact they pace so well that I think the two of them are very similar in their structure, and you could almost, you know, obviously you can see this as one thing effectively. So I mean, how did you feel about those issues?
A couple of things I wanted to point out is that Lost Light 19 is EJ Su being back doing artwork for the first time in donkey's years on IDW. He was, of course, the original artist on Infiltration.
Yeah.
Back in those long, 13 years ago. So it's really nice to see him come back for the end. And I think it's Casey Collier for Lost Light 20.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't know
that
it's different artists.
You wouldn't. They merge so well together, don't they?
Yeah, they really do. And they fit Jack Lawrence's style as well. You wouldn't know that it was separate artists. The only thing you'd probably notice is I think the colouring on Lost Night 19 is a little bit more darker or something.
Yeah.
But that's, other than that, like, the art is almost seamless. So it's really great to see those two guys, EJ and Casey, have done really good work for IDW over the, you know, prior 13 odd years. So it's really nice to see that they're back and, you know, getting a chance to work on these characters before the end again. And it's also really nice that they're actually two really good issues.
Yeah, absolutely solid, I thought.
Yeah.
Now, you know how I've had an issue in the past with Lost Light's humour being a little bit too often. I actually think the pacing, the pacing of these two comics, now that there's some actual direction, some movement, some action, it feels as though the humour is actually just welcomed. And I thought it was timed really well. And there's some so many like one-liners in there that I just really liked. And in actual fact, it'll be on the next issue we talk about, the Optimus Prime issue. There's a one-liner in that which I thought was brilliant. But coming back to Lost Light, I really liked the way things played out, even all the way to the end of the issue. I felt like, you know, I loved the kind of the element of those guys, you know, struggling to deal with the Spark Eaters, but eventually Rodimus going, no, I need to think this through and I need to work this out. He's almost like coming of age again in a way in these issues. Gone is the, I suppose, like the reactionary warrior, and now you're seeing a guy that's trying to start to kind of be the leader that everyone's expected him to be all these years. And I feel that you know obviously getting up to Getaway was really important for him, but the fact that Cyclonus, I just love that thing when him and Cyclonus get on the ship. And Cyclonus flies off as if he's, like, you know, running away, and Starsaber goes after him. And the spoiler alert, kill shot that Cyclonus just, like, stops dead, pulls his sword out and cuts him in half, and then gives him that, like, line of, I hope Primus forgives you for all you've done kind of thing, like I hope all of my bad things are forgiven kind of thing. It's just, like, it was just so, like, effective, I thought.
I agree that's cool, but also, I don't like Starsaber, the third best Autobot leader, going out like a I do like that character, you know, from his previous iterations and incarnations. I don't think they used him well enough in this series. You know, he's always kind of a background character who occasionally fought with Cyclonus. You never really got a feeling for him, other than, you know, he's like a religious zealot.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a shame. Because he's got probably one of the cooler designs in Transformers.
Very Gundam style.
Yeah, it's kind of I wish they'd done a little bit more with him.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, I know everything's coming to an end, but, and you know, there's too many Transformers characters to give them all justice, even over a 13-year character, you know, a 13-year run. But I don't know, I think it would have been nicer to see a little bit more of what they were up to.
Yeah.
And maybe make them feel a bit, Leon himself and Scorponok and Getaway, to maybe make them feel a bit more of a threat, and maybe if there'd been a little bit more time spent with those characters over the last year,
yeah,
just to give them a little bit more of a chance to shine, maybe it would have felt a little bit more earned.
No, I totally get that. I think what I like about it is I like being kind of surprised sometimes. That sounds dodgy, but mm-hmm. I do like it when something that you kind of expect to happen doesn't happen, something else happens, even if it's like to the, say for example in Star Wars, having Snoke killed the way he was killed, like that, as much as it was kind of one of those things where like, oh, but I really wanted to know what he was like. That's one of the reasons they kill him, is because everyone's expecting that to be the case. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a good film or anything. I'm just saying that I sometimes like that when you're surprised to the point of like just being taken out of the comfort zone. As long as it doesn't take me out of reading the book. If it takes me out and I'm like all of a sudden like, you know, not interested or upset or pissed off, then, you know, like that, then I've got an issue with it. But if it's a case of being pissed off and still being in that universe, if I'm like still like, you know, completely consumed. And I feel that kind of did that. And I think that's why I could accept the Star Saber thing, because I was like, holy shit, Cyclonus just like, you know, just went ham on Star Saber. And it's one of those things you're just not expecting. You're expecting some kind of battle, some sort of, you're expecting those like almost like three fights to be going on at the same time and all conclude around the same point. And because that doesn't happen, it's like, oh, wow. And then that obviously gives Cyclonus the opportunity to help Rodimus when he's getting his ass kicked. Although I should say that he's getting his ass kicked and then Tyrest. That was a reveal, wasn't it? So Tyrest appears and it turns out that Getaway's kind of been working for him, but in another way, there's someone else that I'm guessing is Unicron as the Grand Architect. So it's already kind of spoiled in that we'll be looking at Unicron 1 in a little while. And it's not so much that we know what's going to happen, but we know who's going to be alive at the end of it. That's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of is a bit of a, it's a bit of an annoyance for I know both of us.
One last thing that I want to bring up before we give our potatoes. Lost Light 19. They introduce Slapdash and he's dead the next panel. Or, you know, Road King.
Yeah.
Road King, as you know, he's really called, because that's the best version of him.
Hasbro were like, we need to get this character in the comic. Can you get him in the comic? And I'll be like, yeah, sure. And kill him immediately. There you go.
And kill him immediately.
Oh, God.
Slapdash is one of the very few Transformers I actually owned as a kid. So it was like a brief instant of, oh, yeah. And then, oh, no. Those two panels were a roller coaster of emotions for me.
Poor Paddy. There's another nice touch in there. And when Hot Rod goes to save Getaway from burning to death, he comes out of the flames and obviously all of his paintwork's been burnt off, so he's back to his red and yellow now, or purple and yellow, or whatever, maroon and yellow.
The whole point of the black and purple was that it was always that he was going to go back to his regular colours when he got the ship back.
Yeah.
You know, it was the reason he'd painted himself in the other colours is because he had lost a ship. And it was kind of like he was in mourning.
Yeah, yeah.
So, of course, now, obviously, he's defeated Getaway, so he's got the colours back. So that was a nice touch. It makes all those alternate repaints and all those third-party versions of Lost Light Rodimus now non-canon. So,
brilliant.
So suck it, Mastermind Collectibles.
Suck it hard. I was just a real big fan of both of these. What would you give it as a potating for... I mean, we can probably lump them both in, because I would actually give the same potatings for both. I'm not sure about yourself.
Okay. I think so. I'd say a solid 3.5.
And I'm going to go with 4, because I've been surprised by how Lost Light has kind of pulled me in, where I was kind of like slipping away a little bit. The last kind of few issues that we've covered, I've just been like really into it. I really enjoyed the Madeira, better kind of like euthanasia clinic type angle.
Media, sorry.
And so that's kind of like pulled me back in. So I'm going to give it a 4 potatings on that one for the way that this has played out.
I think we've mentioned it before. The fact that it's that they were given a deadline to get the story told by has really helped the book in the last year. Them knowing that 25 was it. And, you know, now, as of today, they have 100 pages left in this story. I think that has really helped them move it along, and because they know they have to get the story told now rather than dragging. There was a lot of drag in this series and towards the end of More Meets the Eye as well. So the fact that they've been told, right, wrap it up, guys, you've got whatever, 8 months, whatever it was they were told, I do think that's really helped the storytelling, because now, you know, times are running short.
Yeah, totally. And soon we will be at the end of this entire continuity.
Although, looking at the back of the issues, they have a timeline as to when the next, what the publishing dates are going to be for the finales. And everything has been pushed back into October now because of not being able to ship stuff on time. I do think they set themselves too ambitious of a goal to get everything wrapped up this year. Or you're certainly the double shipping thing. They obviously wanted to get the comics wrapped up a couple of months before the end of the year rather than rebooting in January for whatever reason. And that's why they tried to double ship a couple of months. And of course, that didn't work out quite as well they wanted. But of course, we have San Diego Comic Con is next week. And apparently they're going to be dropping some hints about what's coming next at a panel next Thursday.
Yeah, that'd be worth keeping an eye on. We'll probably report on that on the next Comic Burst in and around SDCC, I think. Probably would be a good idea. So we can move on. Optimus Prime issue 20. The Falling part 5. Optimus Prime has faced defeat before and come back, but he's never seen anything like this. Beyond life, beyond death, only the wisdom of an old friend can save him. Meanwhile, Victorion battles Devastator, and only one will survive. What did you think about Optimus Prime 20?
Spoiler alert, according to Unicron issue 1, it's Victorion who survives.
So true. I mean, there's a lot we can take. There's a lot we can talk about with Unicron spoiling stuff. I mean, the fact that Prime and Bumblebee are in it, the fact that RC's in it, and then RC in this issue, we are led to believe, has suffered a horrible fate. So it's like Unicron has basically ruined all of those possible interesting plot points for us. I mean, I was half expecting RC to pass away in this issue. I really was, but then obviously I'd forgotten that she appeared in Unicron Free Comic Book Day issue 0.
And now, of course, obviously in Unicron 1, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes.
Yeah, so... Oh.
So, yeah.
It's hard to enjoy when you're ruined.
It is. And actually, I also have to say, I don't think this is a particularly strong issue. The best part of it, and it is by far the best thing, is that gorgeous Kazama cover of Beast Wars, Optimus, and Megatron. That is a fantastic cover. I love it. I will buy that in a t-shirt. No, not too busy talking about that. But yeah, the rest of the issue, you know, as again, because it's been spoiled, it doesn't have any tension in it. There you go. And I don't think it's well enough written to surpass the fact that it's already been, you know, there's not enough in it to enjoy to ignore the fact that it's already been spoiled at the end of this story arc.
Totally. It's hard to invest in it when you know a lot of those mm-hmm. points have been dealt with already, you know. And it's hard to view it on its own merits because of that. It's difficult to be unbiased towards this issue on its own standalone merits because you already know what's happened in the future. Now, I know that you could argue with, you know, a lot of people that go back and read kind of Silver Age comics or like, you know, like a Marvel run of X-Men, but know what's happened, can still enjoy those comics. But when it's this fresh and the ruin is like the next issue that we're going to look at and one that I read after this anyway, has kind of like
released just, on the same day.
Yeah, just deflates you.
Yeah,
it's so odd. I don't really want to dwell on it too much because I kind of feel that, I don't know, I just kind of feel like we can't really give it enough credit because of that. And all I can say is that from like going through it, it was one of the better ones that I've read in the Optimus Prime series since we've been ruined by the Unicron saga. But at the same time, I just kind of want this to finish now. I want it to be done and dusted because obviously we also know another massive spoiler, which we'll talk about now. Oh, actually, let's do the potatings first. We might as well. What's your potating for Optimus Prime issue 20, Paddy?
I'm going to give that cover 5 potatoes.
Nice.
But overall, it's a 2.5 star book, I'm afraid.
I'm going to have to say exactly the same. Completely mirror you. That cover's gorgeous. I love how they've got, you know, like basically the Tyrannosaurus Rex face arm looking so real and, you know, jumping out the page at you. But that's not, you know, he's not even in the T-Rex mode, which is brilliant. Like, he's in his robot mode, and then there's Primal behind him with the swords behind you, like, you know, about to just literally go off. I just absolutely love it. It's so just beautiful. You're right.
It's a very dynamic eye-catching cover. certainly.
Massive, yeah. And I also have to say that the actual thing has just been ruined completely by this Unicron saga. The thing that Lost Light has going for it is there are a lot of things that we just don't know are going to happen yet. We still are up in the air with a lot of things because a lot of those characters don't come over to the Unicron saga as yet. And we don't know in that case who's alive and who's dead.
And apparently they're not going to.
Which is a good thing.
It's going to finish its out. Lost Light is going to be away in its own little universe, apparently.
Away in a manger, yeah. And that's fine by me because it means that I can enjoy Lost Light for a little bit longer and I can kind of just, you know, hope to find Optimus Prime run out. Now, let's move on. Transformers Unicron Issue 1. The darkest hour has come. Optimus Prime stages a desperate gamble as the World Eater Unicron approaches Windblade's homeworld, but that's just the appetizer. The main course is Cybertron, with a side of Earth. And it's starting to look like no force in the galaxy can stop the end from coming. Whoever wrote that has got a really good sense of humour. Okay, so Transformers Unicron Issue 1, Paddy. I'm just going to go out and say it. Shockwave. Now you go from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Massive spoiler.
Shockwave's a prisoner of Optimus Prime and is missing his arm. So we know he didn't win the falling Issue 6. And also his Maximals are now being used as Unicron's private army. So I imagine that's going to happen in the falling Issue 6.
Yes.
Couple of nice things in it. I'm not going to be all too negative. Hooray, Maximals and Predacons in the IDW universe.
Yes,
and
yes.
Knocking the shit out of the regular cast. Although the scale on those characters does not make sense, since obviously in Beast Wars Optimus Prime is a gorilla and Optimus Prime is a truck, and yet they are exactly the same size in the IDW universe and apparently just as much of a threat as each other. So it's nice to see Beast Wars characters. I've always been a Beast Wars fan, except for the two Japanese series, which are of course terrible, but the rest of the Beast Wars stuff is all good. So it's nice to see them get a bit of a spotlight, but again, it's suffering from, why did you not wait, lads? Why did you not wait and release this, starting double ship this from next month on and do two issues of this a month and get it done?
I mean, there was always the fact that you can kind of hold back, but it's difficult when you collect comics and you're not told that, you know, don't read Unicron yet because Lost Light and Optimus Prime need to finish. Had that been stated...
They don't want to do that, Chris, because then you won't buy the book.
Yeah, exactly. But doesn't it... I mean, the whole thing just gets soured. I mean, what a way to end the continuity by having this timeline just completely from like the off. It just blows my mind. And I know we're talking about it every comics burst now, but it really does make a difference. And that there are some gorgeous pieces of art.
This week's issues have actually the most egregious sufferings put upon them by the fact that this issue has come out. Like, it's noticeable more than anything now, because like we suspected this is going to happen, and now it has happened, and it's actually worse than I thought, where there is literally no point in buying the next issue of Optimus Prime. Because, so that's really, really poor. It just is. And it really annoys me, to be honest. And I wouldn't mind if, you know, there was rereadability in, for example, the Optimus Prime issue that was released this week. But there isn't. It's a poor issue of the comic, you know, and which is a shame, because, you know, the first couple of issues of this arc were great, and it's just gotten progressively slower. And I also think that having that the falling storyline in Optimus Prime be six issues was a big mistake, because the pacing is terrible. It's just too slow. And it's the problem we've discussed with the Optimus Prime series, again, where there's a lot of people standing around talking for a long time. And so, you know, this story arc could probably have done been a couple of issues shorter for what we know is going to happen now. In the end, you didn't need six issues to tell this story. And I do feel Unicron is actually probably going to be the same, because this first issue of it is so slow.
Yeah.
You could summarize what happens in four sentences. It didn't need to be a six issue series, obviously, because what's happened in the issue zero and what's happened in issue one is one issue of most comics.
Yeah. And I think that the only thing that really like draws any interest from me at all is that splash page with the arc and Unicron and all of the kind of battles going on. It really kind of I get that kind of, I don't know, almost like that kind of nostalgic feel of the old box art on the back of the boxes, where you've got like those big space battles going on with all the toys. And I think that is, and that's Alex Milne, isn't it? But I mean, that is some gorgeous pages. The art's beautiful, exceptional, really nice. There's a lot going on in a lot of pages, but yet it doesn't feel cluttered.
That's another thing I didn't like as well, is that there's actually so much going on that you don't really... There's a part in this where the character Dirge, spoiler alert, gets killed. Yeah, just randomly out of nowhere sacrifices himself to save two no-name characters. Well, sorry, one of them is Cindersaur from the Fire Cons, but he just sacrifices himself for no reason, gets himself torn apart. Where was he coming from? Where was he previously?
Yeah.
Why do we care? Dirge hasn't been a fixture in the IDW universe at all. You know, it's a death just for a death's sake, just to have something happen. Because he's a named seeker from back in the day. They just, we'll have him die, and then they move on. I just don't understand what they want to do with this series, other than obviously wrap up their universe. But I just, does any of us really care that a bunch of the Cybertronian Connellys have been destroyed by Unicron? Really? Because they never used any of them for anything. You can't miss something that they've never used already. You know what I mean? I don't really care that all the Kamians have lost their homeworld. It's just like, I didn't really like any anyways. And the same thing with, the Beast Wars planet. It's like, that's great. There was a Beast Wars planet. Now it's gone. Great, I guess. You know, the stakes aren't...
Yeah.
They want these to have this to have big stakes. But when you don't give a shit about most of the characters that they're killing off or using, it's kind of hard to care about the stakes.
I think that they've suffered from this thing of, trying to get every single character, every single faction, every single thing in the world stuffed into this book. And I think that... you're right. I mean, a lot of these stories could have been told on a much smaller scales, on less issues, or just been better in general. And I think that, obviously, I just think now, I don't think we'd be as annoyed at this issue had it not been ruined, or had it not ruined other issues for us. Because now we're in a position where we've got, I don't know, like six more issues, and I'm adding those all together because there's three of each left of Lost
Light.
There's
essentially 12 issues left. We have 5 of Unicron and then 4 each of, sorry, 13 issues. So 4 each of the ongoings and then 5 of Unicron.
So, I mean, with all of that, that is effectively kind of pointless to read now. It does just put this thing on just puts a dampener on everything. And I think that you might as well just stay with Unicron now until the end, but then... it's just annoying. And I think that from a company standpoint, this has been a massive failure on IDW's kind of, from their point of view. They probably, I don't know if they see it that way. I'm sure, like, as we've mentioned, I mean, sales have been affected in the Lost Light and Optimus Prime regions now. So, I mean, it's really bad considering they wanted this to be the spike that, sold some issues as well and got it going again. And considering it's coming to an end, I think everyone's just done. I think everyone's happily ready for this just to be okay. Well, if you're going to end the continuity, end it and start again. But it could have just been just as easy to go the end of the arc and now we're starting a new arc, easy to do that. I don't think it necessarily would have, I don't think anyone would have cared. Or the care would have been exactly the same if they'd have started a new arc as opposed to kill the continuity and start again. I don't think it would have made much difference to the comic goers, but we'll see when we get those the numbers through for the first issues of the new continuity.
Mm-hmm. Interesting thing, a tidbit I'll bring up. I was down collecting my comics this evening so we could review them. I don't pirate kids, I buy my comics. Our local plastic crack dealer, Dublin City Comics, sponsors of this Order of Battle. I dropped in to get my comics this evening, and they mentioned that they've actually seen a small spike in sales on Lost Light in the last 4 to 5 months.
Interesting.
It's not from people who were aware that it was ending. It's from people who have heard it's really good.
Yeah.
And are now coming to it late in the day. And they're finding that all these people are coming to it now and going, oh, wait, it's ending?
Oh,
So they picked it up for a few issues, and now they've heard it's ending, and now they're dropping it again.
Unbelievable.
Now, of course, this is anecdotal, of course. You know, it's only one shop in a city, but it's a shop that actually does, they do quite well. The licensed titles do quite well for them, where they don't do well in other comic shops in Dublin. But they would stock, they because they're a toy slash comic shop, you know, with a heavy focus on the toys, as Brian will no doubt confirm to me. Their fan base is toy centric as well, and so they sell a lot of licensed stuff, like Turtles would be one of their best selling books, for example, and they're getting people are coming in to buy Lost Light because they keep hearing that it's good and it's back to its old form and so on, and now they're coming in being told, well, actually, no, you know, it's ending in 4 or 5 issues. So people are now suddenly backing away from it again.
It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's not necessarily something you could foresee, I suppose, but at the same time, like, I just feel like IDW have dropped the ball in a big way. And it's not, I mean, if they just got their stuff out on time and in order, I don't think there'd been as much of a problem. But obviously, this is a different issue. The fact that people are like jumping on because, like you say, they're hearing that it's really, really good. Where were those people? Like, I mean, this is like 20 something issues in. How has it taken this long to get the word out? I feel like Twitter is like constantly rife with this stuff, like, especially with and Facebook too, with the kind of promotion of everything.
But that's our Twitter, Chris. We are in our own little comics and toys bubble.
Yeah.
You know, we follow the right people, and well, we follow all the people, and so we see this stuff. Whereas a casual comics reader wouldn't, you know, a casual comics reader won't even know that this book exists. Because most stores don't.
Yeah. What about a Transformers fan? Are all the Transformers fans locked in here? Or is it a case of like... Because as a Transformers fan, you know, I get the feeling a lot of the guys that are picking this comic up are fans of Transformers. Like, and probably have, you know, and probably read comics because they wouldn't be going into Dublin City Comics all the time or at all. Is there an element that some of these Transformers fans that are in the community in general that are like interacting with other Transformers fans online and so on and so forth, you know, I just find it really weird that it's taken like 20 something issues to get people to kind of find out about it if you're a Transformers fan. Obviously, like, if it's not Transformers fans, then fair enough, I get it, but
it's not necessarily Transformers fans who are doing it. It's people who are interested in toys and other licensed properties. Maybe they're interested in Turtles or whatever, and they're hearing from their friends that this book is very good. And they hear it enough that you try it out and maybe you buy a trade paperback, and now they're being told, well, actually, this is coming to an end. You're not going to get them back when this reboots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or certainly you're not going to get all of them back when this all reboots. So, you know, I've always felt that if you want to get an audience for your comic, make it a very good comic.
Yeah.
And I think for a time, Word Meets the Eye was the best comic out there, but they never gave it the promotional push I think it probably deserved.
Yeah.
And you know, the word of mouth was very, very good, and they got good sales off that. There was a dip in quality, it lost sales, quality's come back up again, and it's ending. So you know, you're not going to get people back on board with a book that's going to end soon. You know, they'll if they're going to buy it at all, they'll wait for the trade paperback, you know.
Yeah. Well, having said all that, what would you give Transformers Unicron as a potating?
2.5.
I'm also going to go 2.5. I feel like I've been copying you the whole time, but I actually do agree with that. I'm just so soured over the whole thing now. And anyway, it means we can get on to the last issue that we need to discuss today. That we've got Brian on board for. Hey!
Sorry, G.I. Joe fans, you had to hang on for 50 minutes of Transformers talk.
Two old men being
mean about Transformers. Now two other old men, or one similar old man and one new old man, can be grumpy about G.I. Joe.
That was really convoluted. Oh, yes. So let's move on. G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, issue 253. Special Missions, part 3 of 5. G.I. Joe, Cobra, two opposing forces, two powerful war machines, each made more lethal by the undeniable strength of their individual parts. But who and what are these parts? Living legend Larry Hammer shares some of their amazing stories in Special Missions, one-shot stories featuring a variety of characters and different artists to draw them. This issue, longtime G.I. Joe alum Brian Shearer joins forces with Larry to present G.I. Joe's intrepid first sergeant without equal, Duke. So, Brian, thanks for joining us, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm doing great. And, whoa, I've read 253 tonight. Oh, my God. I mean, you really saved the best to last tonight. You saved the best to last.
Hey, we gave Bumblebee 4 stars.
Yeah, this is he's obviously going to have to give this a sack of potatoes, isn't he? Brian, tell us why, mate. Why is this Duke issue one of your standouts then?
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I had tears. I cried at the end of this. Okay. So we start off. This starts off. It's obviously it's you know Duke. We see Roblox. It's before. They've joined G.I. Joe and they're on a mission somewhere in the Middle East.
Trucial Abysmia.
Yes. Oh, that's one of the
names. Which is the fake Marvel country that they've used in G.I. Joe for many, many years.
So we see the guys, they're on a convoy. This actually reminded me very much of Desert Strike, which we touched on in Disorder Battle.
Yes.
With Z-Force kind of stranded out in the middle of a civil war in the Middle East. So we've got a very similar scenario here with kind of UN forces that they're guiding a civilian convoy through the desert. And as they kind of, you know, round a corner, well, maybe even before we get to that, there's some kind of banter within the Humvee. So you've got Duke kind of riding shotgun. You've got Roblox up top with the big gun. And then we have
Maureen
Hennessy with her lucky charms.
You guys are the perfect people to have on for this particular issue, definitely.
She's absolutely
or
brilliant.
Or would be if I'd read in a real American Hero comic in 24 years.
And Maureen is there, like she's talking about, you know, when this mission's over, when her kind of tour of duty's up, that she's going back to, back to America, and she's going to work in her brother's Irish bar. I mean, she's, you know, okay.
Of course she is. thanks, Larry, for making her have the most cliche Irish job ever after potato farmer. Oh yeah, sure, she's a bar woman.
She started as a potato farmer, so
the entire economy of this country and of the Irish American population in the States is either harvesting potatoes or turning the potatoes into alcohol and then selling it to other people. That's all it is. That's all we do. You can't do anything else.
So as our kind of as the banter sort of progresses and the convoy moves on, the illustrator Brian Sherry brings us inside the Humvee. We're in the Humvee, and then he takes us out of the Humvee. We can see the view outside. The civilians are gone, and the guys are coming to a 90-degree bend in the road. And Duke warns that it's a perfect spot for an ambush. And then Brian Sherry takes it up again, another level to this aerial view. And of course, you can see hidden up in the ridge is a lot of enemy combatants ready to pounce.
And then, boom, they knock out the heavy equipment first. So they take out the tank. And then we have like them just getting absolutely pummeled with fire. Maureen takes a shot in the side of the face that goes through her, like basically goes through one cheek and out
and
the other.
With the cheek, yeah. It's
and hits Duke as well, I think, doesn't it? Like, so he kind of gets hit. They're both trying to kind of tend to wounds. And then it's just literally about a story then of them being absolutely pummeled, having to deal with it. Having airstrikes come in to kind of help them out, but them getting taken out, you know, the just like basically dealing with being stuck in the desert and being attacked all the way through it, right, Brian?
We've talked again on Disorder Battle, we talked about some of the pacing, some of the all-out action that you see in those kind of classic Action Force comics and the violence level. This particular issue here is some of the most violent battle scenes that I've seen in Real American Hero. Maybe, you know, with the exception of some of the Dawn of the Arashikage stuff. But the pacing on this, it's all out, panel to panel, all out action. And it's our guys basically go, the good guys go straight in, they attack these rebels. They then have to kind of fight their way back out of the mess and then try and pick up a few survivors as well. So it's, I mean, this is the story in a nutshell. It's just this epic battle and how Duke is kind of as leader is kind of leading his team, getting them through this particular situation. And of course, the big heroes on his team are obviously Maureen, the Humvee driver, who puts the Humvee through its paces to get them out of the thick of the action and trying to get them into safety. An airstrike gets called in. You think the pressure's off, but as soon as the jets kind of clear out, you see a dust cloud on the horizon and there's more rebels coming in to try to steal the fuel truck, which is part of Duke's convoy.
And they get hit pretty hard again. And obviously it's like a case of, well, we need to hit this head on. We need to go head on at these guys and try and take the fight to them, which they do. And they do pretty well. But then there are so many of them, they have to change tack. So Duke ends up getting in the driver's seat of the big kind of flammable truck. Even says flammable on the side of it, which I think is quite cute. And like, he's driving that. This is what they want. They're after this big truck anyway, aren't they? I think they're after it for fuel or something.
Yes.
And so he basically drives it with the Humvee by the side of him, you know, keeping the rebels at bay as much as he can. He ends up shooting a bunch, knocking one of the cars out. But then he leaves a bunch of grenades in the driver's seat, jumps out into the Humvee. Maureen then drives them away from the truck. The rebels don't realise but chase the truck down, jumping in to obviously try and then get into the truck to slow it down. And the whole thing goes up, blows up, taking all of the rebels out in the most perfect, fortunate scenario. But again, like, that's what they were after, and they were thinking, I suppose, they were going to get it, and they thought they'd won, and they all get obliterated. And then what we have then, Brian?
We see our Humvee kind of driving away, and Duke is like, Maureen, you can slow down now. And then the camera, or the Brian Shearer gives us a side view of the Humvee. We can see Maureen slumped over the wheel, and a lot of blood pouring out underneath the bottom of the door. And
pretty hideous, that shot, actually.
It's and as soon as I saw that, guys, I filled up.
Oh. What with? you got a beer, you Irish. No, I'm kidding, Gary.
I'm gonna after this episode, I'm gonna need a Hennessy cognac. That's what I'm gonna need.
No, it was quite sad, yeah. And then obviously the next scene is them in Brooklyn, Hennessy's pub, and they're telling the story, obviously, to, is it her brother? I think it's her brother, isn't
it? It's the brother, Fergus, the brother.
Of course. And the lucky charm, which wasn't very lucky for her, is now adorned in the pub, hanging in the mirror behind.
Yes.
Classic manoeuvre. And then obviously we get that hint that, you know, that they said, like, so I think Fergus says, like, something like, are you heading back into, you know, into Trucial Abysmia? Or where, you know, I don't think he actually says that, but he says, are you going back? And then Duke says something along the lines of, no, they want me to do something else. They want me to go back to Staten Island and run some sort of team there. And he says, but I'm not going anywhere without my man Roadblock. And then that's like the end of it, isn't it?
Mission
kind of thing.
Complete, yeah. So it's, I just think Larry Hama is on, he's on a roll. He is on a roll with what he's doing with A Real American Hero right now. And this whole special mission series has delivered. We've got Stalker. We got the Baroness.
That was amazing, Baroness one.
And this Duke story here, again, it kicks.
I have to agree on that. I did like this comic. I thought it was really fast paced. You know, that you just basically kind of, it could have been a silent issue, in all honesty. The story could have been told panel to panel, because Brian Shearer's storytelling in art is just so good. Like, I do, you know, like, his style is definitely, there's definitely a style to Brian's stuff. It's definitely, like, you can tell it's Brian Shearer, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, I've had commissions from Brian in the past that I just absolutely adore. He did an Tiger Force Outback for me, which is just so unbelievably cool, and in a style that I never would have, you know, kind of expected. But again, like, I just thought the story was just like, it felt like the bullets were fizzing past you as you're reading it. And it did not sound corny, but you felt like you were in the thick of it in a way. And I just love the way that kind of happens throughout.
That's actually a brilliant way to describe it. It feels like the bullets are whizzing past you. As I read this, it was like I fell into this story. I just got engrossed. You know, it doesn't take, you know, you read it in, you know, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But I just, for that,
you
was
did.
10 minutes.
It took about 3 hours.
But it was 10 minutes of total, just totally engrossed in the story. It was actually, it packed a punch.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good when you can get, when you can throw a character in there that you've never seen before, you don't know anything about them. you get a little bit of backstory, a little bit of banter with the guys. You see them in action, and then they die, and it affects you. You kind of think, oh, you know, that sucks. That's a shame. That's really bad. Obviously, we knew Roadblock was going to be fine. Obviously, we knew Duke was going to be fine because this was set before the, you know, it's like the whole Unicron thing we were talking about, Paddy. But in this case, like, you know, it just, you know, he did really well in getting that character kind of, fleshed out.
In this case, competently written.
Yeah. Old Maureen O'Flaherty Flanagan, whatever, O'Shea, Hennessy.
I think I know her mom.
It's a really nice one-shot. And like you said before, the special missions have actually been a surprise for me as well. I thought the Stalker one was really cool. Really enjoyed that. Baroness, I thought, was exceptional. I think that still stands as my favourite. And this Duke one has been like almost like the silent issue of the special missions, because again, you could take that text out and you could just have it the action tell the story, really.
100%. In fact, I would actually love to see this without any of the text in it. I think it would be incredible to look at.
I'll get on Photoshop and send you it later. But yeah, what would you give it as a potato rating?
I'm going 5 again with this. This is...
He's gone five. I'd have to say that because I gave the Baroness 5, in fact, I think I gave her a sack. I would say I enjoyed this, but I think Baroness edges it. So I'm going to give this one a 4.5, because as much as I did like it, I do agree with what Paddy was saying, or how he reacted to, you know, the kind of almost constant stereotype that is used for the Irish all the time. And I know I can't really talk because I've been doing potato ratings for the entire time.
To be fair, I think I'm the one who suggested those, Chris.
Oh, you might have been, yeah. I think I was going for a star system, wasn't I?
Yeah.
And you were like, I suggested
potatoes because, you know, that way we'd be different from Justin Bell and that we'd be given 5 potatoes to everything rather than 5 stars.
And it's worked so well. When people listen to this and they haven't listened to, like, all of them, they're like, what the f*** are you talking about? Well, now you know, guys, and as Duke would say, f*** off, I'm in the middle of a battle. Right.
That's actually the motto on his file card, right?
in quotation marks.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for this installment of the Full Force Comics Burst. Thank you to my awesome co-hosts, Paddy and Brian. See you next time at the Blarney Stone. And as always, full leprechauns. I mean, full force. I'm gonna put that in the background. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing, and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter @TheFullForce, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheFullForce. And if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback, questions, or just a troll. Look out for more of these comic bursts on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page, Twitter feed, and YouTube channel from now on. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, located at 601 Business Loop 70 West Suite 263, located in the Parkade Center, Columbia, Missouri. You can visit their website at distantplanetcomics.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/distantplanetcomics.